lately, I've been trying to put my finger on this particular brand of unease that seems to be sitting on everyone's chest these days. And it's a strange weight, to say the least. There's this low-frequency hum that you hear in the walls of an old house. It's the kind that you eventually stop hearing, until one night you realize it's actually been vibrating your teeth for the past 3 hours. And maybe you see this in the grocery store, people standing in the cereal aisle, staring at a wall of brightly colored cardboard with this thousand-yard stare, like they've forgotten why humans need to eat in the first place. Now, everything still functions. The Wi-Fi connects. The mail arrives. The bills are due, as usual. But the realness of the whole thing is peeling. So it's kind of like being in a room where the wallpaper is bubbling because of the humidity. And you're the only one who notices that the house is sweating. So I get the impression that we're all waiting for some cinematic world-ending event. You know, the whole purging fire, zombies, grand finale. That's going to let us finally stop having to check our notifications. But I don't believe that we're getting a climax. I think Terrence McKenna was correct. Toward the end of his life, he didn't predict an apocalypse. He just said things were going to get, or keep getting, weirder and weirder, until the narrative finally snapped. Maybe you've seen this interview where he talked about this. And looking at the state of, well, take your pick, I think the snap already happened at some point, and we're just the ones left standing in the silence trying to figure out why the script doesn't match the movie anymore. Now, before we go too far down the rabbit hole, I should probably tell you a little about who Terrence McKenna actually was. In case you haven't spent your life reading obscure philosophy or hanging out in the weirder corners of the internet. So he was an ethnobotanist with a silver-tongued, well, he was kind of a silver-tongued orator, I guess. And essentially he was the, I guess you could call him the intellectual godfather of the psychedelic underground. But forget the tie-dye cliches. McKenna was a more like a cartographer of the fringe. So he spent most of his life studying how plants, chemicals, technology mess with the human consciousness. He was the kind of guy who could talk for 5 hours straight about the various topics, such as the end of history, the birth of language, the nature of time. And he could do all this without ever really losing his place. So some people called him a visionary. Other people called him a crackpot. But whatever the case, the thing is, he had this uncanny ability to describe the feeling of the future before it actually arrived. So he wasn't just a guy talking about mushrooms. He was trying to build a map for a world that was about to lose its mind. He saw that coming. Now, when you bring up McKenna, people usually expect you to start talking about machine elves or 5 gram doses of dried, you know, mushrooms in a dark room. And look, that's a fun Saturday for some people, of course, but that's not the point here. I think McKenna's most sober observation was about novelty. So he had this idea that history it's not a straight line, and it's not a circle. It's more like a tightening spiral. And as we get closer to the center, the intervals between new things being thrown at us get shorter and shorter. So in the 1800s, you could live your whole life and maybe one or two big things would change. Maybe they'd invent the steam engine or a better way to treat gout. And you had time to process it. Your soul had time to catch up to your body. But now, we're metabolizing 3 once-in-a-century events every Tuesday before lunch. So when McKenna talked about weirdness, he wasn't talking about magic. He was talking about the failure of our cultural immune system. We've reached this point where the sheer volume of information and the speed of technological shifts are moving way faster than the human hardware can handle. And the weirdness is what happens when a biological creature evolved to hunt gazelles and sit around a fire tries to exist inside a 24-hour global digital consciousness. So it's the friction. It's like we're being dragged behind a car that's accelerating, and we're trying to pretend that we're just out for a very fast jog. And it's not that the world is becoming more chaotic necessarily. It's that it's becoming more unrecognizable. And we're losing the ability to tell ourselves a story that makes sense. We're living in a script that's being rewritten in real time by an algorithm that doesn't care if we're following the plot. And that's where the disorientation starts to settle into your bones. All right, so this is the part where that actually gets under your skin. So we were raised to think that if the world ended, the lights would just go out. But the lights are actually getting brighter than ever. It's the meaning kind of starting to flicker. So our institutions are still there, you know, the big stone buildings, the titles, the rituals and whatnot, but fewer and fewer people actually believe in them. They're becoming these hollowed out props on a movie set. And we just keep going through the motions because we don't have a backup plan. But the soul has left the building. Language is the first thing to go here. I mean, have you noticed how words don't seem to mean anything anymore? Everything is unprecedented, for example. Every minor inconvenience is toxic. Every headline is historic. When everything's historic, nothing is. So we're shouting into the void using words that have been bleached of their color. McKenna talked about this, how culture eventually reaches a point where it's no longer to explain itself to itself. We've arrived at the vibes era of human history. Truth isn't something you find through logic or evidence. It's just a frequency that you tune into based on who you hate. And we've traded interior lives for these algorithmic identities now. And we're all just performing personhood for a crowd that's too busy performing their own version to even notice ours anyway. Nobody would disagree at this point that we're surrounded by more information than any humans in history. And yet we know less about what's actually going on than a medieval peasant who thought the moon was made of cheese. I mean, at least the peasant had a coherent story. We just have a feed. A never-ending, high-speed scroll of contextless content that tells us the world is ending and then shows us a recipe for 15-minute pasta, then shows us a war, and then an ad for hair loss pills. This is a psychological meat grinder. It's not chaos. Chaos would be honest. This is more akin to a simulation that's just run out of memory. So it's starting to recycle the same three plot points over and over again, just getting slightly more distorted each time. So there's a reason that you're tired. And unfortunately, it's not the kind that a nap can fix. Though I definitely would recommend naps. This is a deep existential fatigue that comes from trying to basically metabolize the impossible. We weren't designed for any of this. Our brains are our essentially slightly upgraded hardware from like 50,000 years ago. We're built to care about what 30 or so people in a small tribe think of us and whether those berries over there are going to kill us. We aren't wired to carry the weight of 8 billion people's tragedies in our pockets. So this weirdness that McKenna talked about acts as a constant ambient stressor, which is something like living in a house with a carbon monoxide leak. You don't feel the poison immediately. You gradually lose your ability to think clearly and you start dissociating. And you start doom scrolling. And it's not because you want information. It's because the repetitive motion of your thumb is the only thing that feels like it has a beginning, middle, and an end. Though it is starting to feel like there is no end. So now we've become a society of people trying to brand our way out of a collapse. Everyone is more or less some kind of micro celebrity in their own little tragedy. And we're so desperate for a sense of control that we retreat into these hyper niche subcultures or extreme ideologies just because they offer a script, even if it's a batshit crazy one. Anything is better than the truth, which is that the ship is moving very fast and nobody's in the wheelhouse. There's ultimately nobody in charge. And the stress isn't that things are bad. It's things have been bad before, obviously. The stress is that things are just nonsensical. So this is the part where McKenna really separates himself from the usual prepper crowd. Most people are actually obsessed with the apocalypse, even if it's in secret. They kind of love the idea of it. Why? Because an apocalypse is like a clean break. It's a reset button. And there's this certain comfort in the idea of everything burning down, because at least you know that the taxes are canceled and you don't have to worry about any of the other bullshit that's dragging you down into existential anxiety. But I think McKenna's vision is actually significantly more haunting. Because he didn't promise us a climax. He promised us a ramp. So he suggested that we're moving toward a transcendental object at the end of time, which sounds rather mysterious, but in practice, it just looks like things are getting increasingly synthetic and strange until the concept of normal is like a museum piece. We're basically standing in this hyper-reality, waiting for the trumpet blast, but instead, we're immersed in AI-generated deepfakes of dead celebrities trying to sell us life insurance or something. And we're getting politics that feels like a professional wrestling match where both guys are in on the script, but it's the audience who are actually bleeding. You know, we're getting this reality that feels more and more like a fever dream that we just can't wake up from. And there's no big bang at the end of this. There's just this gradual thinning of reality. It's the feeling of being in a car that's accelerating toward a wall, but as you get closer, you realize that the wall is just a hologram, and you're just going to keep accelerating through an infinite series of holograms forever. And that's the weird part. It's the realization that the old world, the one where things made sense and people had jobs they kept for 40 years and words that had, you know, words had definitions, that isn't coming back. And the new world it's not a destination. It's just a state of permanent high-speed disorientation. So what are you supposed to do with that exactly? Usually this is where some guy in a clean t-shirt tells you to buy a course or download a meditation app. I'm not going to do that, of course. So if the world is getting weirder, I think maybe the only sane response is to get smaller. And I don't mean shrink your ambition in a defeatist way. What I mean by smaller is intentionally collapsing your radius of concern. If you try to care about everything the internet tells you to care about, you're just giving your nervous system away for free to people who want to, sell you sneakers or whatever. The only real rebellion left is choosing depth over novelty. We are being fed a constant stream of new. But new is cheap. Depth is expensive. Depth is reading a book that's been around for 100 years because it survived the weirdness of a dozen different eras. Depth is spending 4 hours fixing a chair with your hands instead of spending 4 seconds buying a new one on an app. So you have to reclaim your interior life. If you don't have a quiet place inside your own head, the noise from the outside will eventually move in, and it's going to start charging your rent. So stop trying to keep up. You can't. Nobody's keeping up. Even the people who look like they're winning are just better at faking the choreography. And try to find things that have weight. Nature has weight. Physical bodies have weight. A conversation where nobody looks at a screen for an hour has weight. These are the things that don't glitch when the signal gets weak. You know, maybe McKenna wasn't actually warning us. Maybe he was just trying to manage our expectations. We spend so much energy and time being outraged that things don't make sense anymore, as if making sense is the natural state of the universe. But look at a platypus or a nebula. Look at the fact that we are sentient meat riding a rock through a vacuum. The universe has always been a circus. We just had a few decades there where we managed to convince ourselves we were in a library. It was fairly pretty good when it while it lasted, unless the circus is your thing. I don't believe that the world is broken necessarily. It's just becoming unfamiliar to us, and I think it's shedding the skin of the 20th century. And that process is it's messy and deeply uncomfortable, of course. So the work, the actual job of being a person right now, is learning how to live without a coherent lifestyle. And I know that's extremely challenging because humans want a coherent lifestyle. So I think this involves finding a way to stay human when the environment is becoming obviously increasingly synthetic. I definitely wouldn't wait for the world to return to normal. Normal was a localized phenomenon. And this is the ride. And I think the trick isn't to try and stop the car. The trick here is to look out the window and see the flaming hoops and the glitching sky and try to realize that even in the middle of all of this absurdity, you can still choose what you pay attention to. So yeah, it's getting weirder and weirder. Fine. Let it. Just don't let it take your soul with it. All right. That's all I've got today. As always, thanks for listening.